Welcome, everybody, to Caves and Scales West.
West, West, West.
Issue number 4. So we're back again. So it's been a while for me, anyway. I feel like it's been forever because I haven't talked to you guys, but it's only just been a couple weeks, but it feels like forever for me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you have been out of town, you know. You left us to just starve in the wastelands Colorado while you just, you know, go globetrotting.
Travel the world. Yeah. No, I had to go to Utah for a little bit, and then I went to D.C., and then back here. It was a bit of a whirlwind, because I hadn't seen my bed in, like, 2 weeks.
Oh!
Yeah. And so, like, as soon as I got back from that whirlwind tour that I went on, as soon as I got back, I went straight to Denver on Friday for Pride weekend.
Awesome.
Oh, so nice.
I was there all weekend for Pride. So I was like, again, I was like, ah, I'm in Colorado, but I'm not home yet. Yeah. So.
How was that, by the way?
It was fun. Sunday was the best day. That was the parade was on Sunday, and then the park was just like tons of people, tons of people everywhere.
Nice.
But I was so tired by then. It was like parade, see a few people, go home.
Yeah.
I couldn't deal with it anymore.
You're like, Yay, pride.
Now getting back into the rhythms and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now I'm now back in Fort Collins, yay!
Woo! Nice, and so we can be here sitting in the studio recording.
That's right. So how were you guys in the 2 weeks in my absence? While the father was away, the kids were playing.
Well, we broke into the cabin and stole the cookies. You know, we found the hiding spot.
Just climbed up to the rafters.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
Got to get to the top shelves.
Some things looked broken when I got back. How could I ask you about that?
Shh, don't tell him. We'll beat you up. How have you been, Matt?
I've been good, actually. My wife and I celebrated our 1 year anniversary just past weekend, so that was awesome. Other than that, though, I've honestly took a small hiatus from Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. Now I'm back. Kara and I are through episode 1 of season 6, so we're right on track for being ready for season 7. And I also went back and started reading my Black Panther comics from this current run to try to get back to the get back in line with everything.
Yeah.
I'm 2 issues away, so I'm not fully caught up.
Okay, but you're close.
Really enjoying it still. I think it loses its way a little bit in the middle, like it slows down, but still enjoying it.
Yeah.
So, we'll talk in a minute about why you've been reading the Black Panther specifically.
Yeah, there may have been something that was a catalyst to going back to reading.
Probably
something small.
At least one thing. Yeah, I mean, it is relatively small,
I suppose.
But you know, emotionally, it's not small at all. So enough, like, I guess. Enough just previews of what we're talking about later, but so I've had a good week too. It's been pretty kind of crazy. I started a new job. I'm trying to look for a new place to live. And I've been trying, and in my free time I've finally been catching up on all the Netflix shows that we keep talking about. So
yes,
yeah, I just finished The Get Down, like we were talking about.
I can't deal with it right now.
And then I know the other one I can't do, but is still awesome. And I'm catching up on Sense8. So.
Me too. Yeah. Same.
Yeah.
Yep.
So bittersweet.
I know.
So good though.
I know. It's so sad. I don't even want to talk about it. Yeah. But are we going to talk about the fact that Nat killed Adam West? Like, are we going to?
I did no such thing. So we had joked about our powers to maybe negative powers to get things canceled in our previous issue, and we also spoke about our gateways into nerddom, and I happened to mention the 1966 Batman television series, and now we no longer have Batman with us, so...
Like, 2 days later from me listening to that, they announced that he was dead. And at first it took me a second, like, wait, is that the Batman he's talking about? Because I wasn't sure, and I didn't want to give you that power.
I don't want that power! That is not a power that... I have never wanted it.
Oh, man. So for listeners who didn't hear that part, we, a couple episodes ago, we kept talking about the Black Panther and the crew and how awesome it was. And then, like I mentioned before, the Get Down and Sense8, all of which subsequently were canceled immediately after we talked about them.
Yeah.
Probably because we talked about them. And then Nat just had to go and talk about Adam West, who then got himself canceled from life.
Yeah, so. Our cancellation powers are escalating, yeah. And this is not a good thing.
It's kind of scary.
Yeah. I'm scared to review things now.
Right? I know, because most of the things we talk about are things we actually like.
Right? Yes.
So, should we just review bad things?
No, because then they'll be good.
Right?
Oh, shit.
That's our thinking, anyways. That's what we think our powers were.
Well, we have to. This is like, you know, the first couple issues of any good superhero comic when we're like figuring out how to use our powers.
We're definitely at the great power, great responsibility moment. You know,
Coming
to terms with what exactly that means for us right now.
Yeah, and right now we have the power, but damn, our responsibility is so, really lacking.
Yeah, no, it should be much higher.
It is our responsibility to talk about our passions.
Yes,
and
we have to continue doing this. We can't let this stop us.
It's okay. Until everything we love is dead.
Yeah. So on that note, do we want to, you know, kill a movie franchise that looks amazing?
Right. Like, can't kill that, right? We cannot kill that.
Yeah. Let's get into some other news first.
Yeah,
aside from Adam West, what else do you have for us, Nat?
So we got some more movie news. So we can't make a screw up bigger than this, right? we'll talk about the Han Solo film.
Right.
So it's been reported now that Lord and Miller, the directors, have been fired from the production of Han Solo. What's very odd about this is that there was about 3 weeks left of filming. So this is not something that happened during the early days of filming. This isn't something that happened during the creative process and realizing that these were the wrong folks to do this film. This is straight up, we're nearing the end and what's happening is not what we want. So I've heard, and I'm gonna just name a couple sources here so that if you want to do some research later on, my information comes from Collider News as well as StarWarsNewsNet.com, excuse me. Kind of a confusing name. But the more recent reports are actually indicating that Alden Ehrenreich, the actor who was playing Han Solo, was the one to bring up an issue to the producers that something didn't feel right about the portrayal of the character of Han Solo. And it's after watching a rough cut of the film that the Lucasfilm execs kind of put their hands over their faces and went, oh my gosh, what the hell did we just do?
Oh no.
So the two directors were called in to play ball to do some reshooting, and they said, no, we're going to do it our way, and so they were handed the door. So,
wow.
Dang.
That's pretty big.
Yeah, and now Ron Howard has come in to step in as the final director for this film.
Yeah. That's nuts. Like, yeah, I was looking at the news too, and it seemed like every day it was like, so and so is filming the Han Solo, is directing the Han Solo movie, so and so is dropped from it, such and such is directing the Han Solo movie, such and such is dropped from it, and Ron Howard.
Yep.
Finally.
Yep. And this was over the course of 2 days. Like, it wasn't like a major, you know, the announcement was made, they're not there, then all these names popped up, and then, nope, Ron Howard's doing it.
Yeah.
So it's really, really, really
strange. Ron Howard has done, why do we care about him? He's done,
oh,
what?
Man.
He's anything? Done like 40 movies.
All right. What's the most recent?
Rush was probably his most recent film.
I think so. He did Apollo 13.
Okay.
He did Cocoon, I believe was him.
Interesting.
He directed Willow with Lucasfilm, so there's a previous relationship. He was in American Graffiti. He's most famous for being in Happy Days.
Yeah.
Huh.
So,
okay.
For those fans of Arrested Development, he's the narrator.
Oh yeah,
in Arrested Development, yeah.
He wasn't showrunner on that show, but he did have he had writing and directing duties on a few episodes, I believe.
I think he did one or two episodes. Yeah.
So we assume he's gonna be the one to pull it all together. Do you guys have faith in him to be the one to pull it together?
He's such a vet of filming. Like he can pretty much do anything. Like he's kind of like a multi-tool of like a director.
Right. But is that what you need for Han Solo? Though?
Supposedly, one of the things that the reasons that he was chosen specifically is the relationship with Lucasfilm in the past,
mm-hmm.
and then that he's a calming presence.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling that maybe the actors, not just Alden Ehrenreich, but everybody else involved, may have been not so excited about the direction that the movie was going.
Mm.
So you bring somebody who naturally calms that down and just gets the performance out of actors.
Mm.
That it could be a really positive thing. The word that's being thrown around is that it was too jokey and that there was a lot of improv that was happening and it was actually changing the story.
Sure.
And you're talking about such a heavily interconnected universe. The canon of Star Wars is really what's mm-hmm. been a huge push with this new Lucasfilm deal. It's right. been this new canon that's being developed. So if something that was said in the improv went off the script so far, it could really change the history of a character that's been around for 40 right. years. You know, that's...
Yeah. Well, if all of a sudden they're like, Darth Vader loves hot dogs.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You know, who knows what, like, impact right. that has on...
Yes.
Yeah, like, just an off comment. So you actually know this Darth Vader guy? And it's like...
Right.
Yeah.
None of like, it makes sense again.
Like, yeah, we went to high school together.
Yeah.
Or something.
You know, right. and it could have been off like comment.
Just like Wicked.
So just changing too much. I don't know. I'm excited still. I'm trepidatious more than I was already.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that anybody was really clamoring for a Han Solo film, but right. I want to see Lando Calrissian. You know, I need
mm-hmm.
Donald Glover. That's one of the driving forces for me is actually the supporting cast on this movie. You have Donald Glover and you have Daenerys. Why can't I think of the actress's name right now?
Oh, Kristen Wiig.
No, Daenerys Targaryen from from Game of Thrones is...
Oh, not Kristen Wiig.
Emilia Clarke. Emilia Clarke is actually playing someone in this film as well.
Hmm.
So, you know, that's an exciting casting, so...
Yeah. Well, when is it supposed to come out?
It's May of next year.
All right. Well, I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see.
Supposedly extensive reshoots after the 3 weeks of remaining principal photography on the film, so...
Let's cross our fingers, see what happens.
Cross our fingers.
Yeah. They're going to pump the rest of it out like a Bollywood film.
Oh, my God.
I'll shoot the whole thing in 3 weeks.
Oh,
hey, supposedly Rogue One had a series of reshoots that...
Right, and it was a great movie.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It turned out wonderful.
But
in that instance, it looks like the director did play ball when they were like, something's not working.
Okay. All right.
So,
what else we got for news?
I guess going off of movies, the Jurassic World sequel is
Woo-hoo!
It just got
That's crazy to me.
It just got a subtitle name, so it's Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom is going to be the name. And whether or not you're a fan of the original Jurassic World, which is, you know, like the fourth movie in the franchise, it's gonna have Jeff Goldblum in it, from what I understand, so that's like...
The tagline on the poster is Life Finds a Way, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
That is a famous line from the first film.
Yeah, from Jeffy G himself. So I'm super excited, if for nothing more than just seeing Jeff Goldblum in another Jurassic Park movie.
I'm an unabashed fan of Jurassic World. I know that that is a polarizing opinion. I think that people don't give the movie credit for how smart it is as being almost a mockery of action films.
Mm. Mm.
They make comments... we're going to get into a weird topic of discussion. So there's a lot of discussion about the high heels wearing by...
Actually, an actress.
It's Bryce Dallas Howard, Ron Howard's daughter...
We'll
be taking over the Star Wars film. Random. however, they talk about it early. It's mentioned in the story, in the context of the story. And this is one of the moments that I love about Jurassic World. They mention it. He talks about how ridiculous it is to be wearing shoes like that in a situation where they're in the jungle. The shoes get a close-up in the final act. they pay a payoff joke to the idea that she's wearing the heels. It's not meant to be taken seriously, right. But everybody's like, oh, what is this? No, this movie, watch it again and start taking notes on action movie tropes and watch how you can check the box that they pay off every one of them each time.
I'm not against that idea, but I didn't go into the movie prepared for that. Therefore,
gotcha.
I didn't know that was the kind of movie it was supposed to be because the first Jurassic Park had nothing like that. There was no comedy about the T-Rex coming down on the two kids in the car and freaking out. There was no like trope about that.
Right, yeah.
That was a serious situation, and those kids might have died.
Yeah, there was a joke about that in Jurassic World where they're like, oh, there's nothing ever in the whole world that can break through the glass. Not ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
Okay,
it would take,
you're right.
You know, a 50 caliber bullet, like, driven by like a train or something.
Right.
I don't know.
Well, and I honestly, the movie is not without dread too. There is a level of hopelessness in the scenario. That's why some of the characters that are introduced are cannon fodder for the dinosaurs.
Right.
And that's what you want to have happen.
For sure.
But I think that the movie is meant to be a straight action film, but I think it's designed to check the boxes. Now, this is not unconfirmed. It's just, I was watching it, it became really clear to me. I'm like, holy shit. They're actually they're making a solid action movie that's paying homage to the action film tropes and winking at you. And it's whether or not you're catching them winking at you. Mm. So I really love Jurassic World.
See, I think I'm probably right in the middle of both of you guys because I watched it and I was I went in expecting, people running from dinosaurs and then people shooting at dinosaurs and then dinosaurs fighting dinosaurs. And that's exactly what the movie gave me. Mm. It was nothing. Yeah. It was exactly what it was, what I wanted it to be. And I didn't have high or low expectations. I just went in there and watched it, and it was entertaining for sure.
Yeah.
But now I kind of want to go back on it with a
more critical,
critical lens and watch it.
And also the fact that I wasn't a big Guardians of the Galaxy fan,
right?
And so that kind of made me not a big fan of Chris Pratt, and then that made me then I see him in this movie, and I'm like, and then it's like, yeah, the little jokes. I'm like, Chris, I don't like this.
Yeah.
But whatever. I candy. That's all he's for. So that's good enough.
But as far as the sequel goes, I hope there's a darker tone. It would be interesting.
Yeah, I would love a darker tone.
Because there's been so many rumors surrounding what the plot points will be in this. And it's Fallen Kingdom? Is that what the...
Fallen Kingdom.
It sounds darker already,
right?
Well, it
does. And there's Fallen Kingdom can refer to genus, species, phylum, kingdom. It can be the Fallen Kingdom of dinosaurs or the Fallen Kingdom of man.
Mm-hmm.
Are we taking the genetics too far? Mm-hmm. They mentioned in Jurassic World that they wanted scarier, not realistic,
right.
Or else the dinosaurs would all
That's
be
right.
brightly colored with feathers.
Yeah.
So what happens when the people who aren't funding a park but are funding genetic research for weapons development take it to the next level?
Did
I'm kind of hoping that that's the direction
kind of like a
goes.
Did you see
that?
Exactly,
which I'm totally down for.
Did
as
you
well.
See that, the sketches and, layouts for the never actually produced fourth Jurassic Park movie?
No.
So this, dropped online a couple of years ago that, that there was a fourth Jurassic of the original series in the making, and it did actually follow that. I just saw, these, really rough preliminary sketches of, these very humanoid velociraptors with, a laser cannon on.
Oh, what?
I know. Yeah. Or maybe not a laser cannon, but some kind
something,
of, gun.
Yeah.
Like an apparatus
attached,
of some kind.
Attached to the arm. So, So, supposedly, that's where the franchise originally was going, if it had ever been produced, which it was not.
Right.
For maybe the better or worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Probably for the better.
Probably for the better. I would like some level of advancement, if they're going to do some sort of crazy genetic changes.
Eye implants, that'd be fine.
Right, even, or a velociraptor that's 10 feet tall.
Sure,
messing with
fine.
It, so
yeah.
They're more terrifying, mm-hmm. and then that becomes a major negative.
And some kind of, like, you know, control switch where you, like, send them right. out to attack people, and then the control switch falls into the wrong hands.
Yes. Sure, and then it malfunctions.
The
other thing that I've heard is the kind of, like, merchandising of dinosaurs. So it becomes passé, like, dinosaurs are pets for people.
Right.
And you can go to Flintstones, you can go to a restaurant and get a brontosaurus burger.
Interesting.
So turning it into a complete commercial thing, and maybe that being the downfall of man, is that we've taken something that shouldn't have existed with us,
right.
turned it into a commercial product, and become desensitized to it, and then...
It eats us.
And so you bring the threat here. I think that would be an important thing for me, is to not go off to an island. Is to have to worry about it being in, like,
because I feel like by now we should be smart enough. I mean, obviously, we're still stupid, but we just keep going to the stupid island.
Well, and
but that's what makes, like, the is it the which Jurassic Park is it where they bring the T-Rex? Is it the third one? Where
the second one?
The second one where they bring it back to like San Francisco, I think, or something like that. The last act of the movie is it just, like, running around and, like, crushing buildings and stuff.
Yeah. I think leaving that T-Rex, she had her moment in Jurassic World, so it would be nice to not go back there and maybe leave that, because they say that that's the original T-Rex from the first film. So that's her moment. She had it. Now let's take the story in a different direction. I don't know. I'm speculating now. Yeah. At this point, I'm just talking about what would I want to see in this perfectly Jurassic World. I'm no writer. I know it's plot points, maybe, but...
You got any other news for us then?
Yeah, well, we'll keep with this movie theme. So, Justice League is in a little bit of, I wouldn't call it turmoil, but there was a tragedy that happened with Zack Snyder's family, and he has left production. We won't go into that. You can research, find that information out. Heart goes out to the Snyders. But Joss Whedon was brought in to finish the reshoots. He had been writing reshoots for the production already. To finish filming duties and to finish the editing. Well, underneath Joss Whedon, they have actually fired Junkie XL from the score of the film. So he will no longer be recording the score. And instead, Danny Elfman, who did the 1989 Batman film, Nightmare Before Christmas, and I believe he worked with Joss Whedon on a few films. Off the top of my head, I cannot remember which ones he'd done. Mm-hmm. I don't think he did the Avengers, but... what I think this represents is a tonal shift. It may have been one of the cases where the soundtrack probably hadn't been recorded. The score usually is recorded with a cut of the film, and seeing as how they're still doing reshoots on the film, it's probably not a clear cut yet to record off of. But if there's a tonal shift as a result of Wonder Woman, it might be better to bring somebody who's maybe a more whimsical composer and somebody who's less hard-edged. Because I love the Junkie XL scores. His Wonder Woman theme is fantastic. Mm-hmm. But you think of also one of the great lasting themes is the 89 Batman theme. Mm-hmm. It was so good a variation was used for the animated series, which is the hallmark of the character. So there may be a change in tone, and music can do a lot to that. You know, you may be able to get away with all of the same sequences, but you put a different theme behind it, and it feels different. It may feel more heroic. It may feel more optimistic. And it could be a good thing. Or darker. And I think that may have been the problem, is I think maybe Junkie XL's music was too hard, too dark, and it was... maybe not the fit that Whedon sees for the future
for
of
the
what
team
these
and
yeah
Justice
for the,
League yeah
yeah I saw this I saw I was just reading an article a couple of days ago about how like DC for their like cinematic universe, like after Wonder Woman came out, like they're kind of rethinking their whole approach to it, and that was one of the things that they were talking about, is lightening up the tone a little bit, because like they've been, you know, that's DC's thing, is like the grittier the better, like until it's just like a handful of dirt pretty much, and like,
and it's dirt that's been charred by a flamethrower, so it's like it's dirt,
yeah, it's grit, like this is like and so but after Wonder Woman came out, and it's like ridiculous success that's still going on, they are really rethinking that, you know, maybe not char the grit.
Yes, right.
Because Wonder Woman was pretty gritty in some parts, but it still had, like, that light sort of tone to it throughout.
It was a good balance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There was a level of whimsy that was involved in the story.
For sure.
Definitely.
It lent itself to fantastical elements, which certainly, done correctly, will have a level of whimsy to them. So.
Yeah. And when is Justice League supposed to come out?
November.
November this
year? It's still on track.
Wow. So, wow. All right. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's an effects-heavy film, so that's probably, like, the one question that I would have whether or not it's going to make it on time, but...
Okay.
It depends on how extensive the reshooting was.
Right.
Supposedly, that script has been written or rewritten a couple of times on set. And that's... Okay, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Don't... You know, I don't think that's a panic button thing. Lord of the Rings was rewritten as the day of shooting. There would be new pages that were added to scenes.
That's fine.
So, it is possible to do a rewrite during production and have it work. So
that's not that bad though.
No.
I was I was watching an interview with like Louis C.K., one of my favorites, and he was talking about how he made his show Louis, and he was saying like he just had a meeting with FX and he didn't have anything and he wrote it on the bus on the way to the meeting. Like he wrote like the script for the pilot.
That's awesome.
Just on the way to the meeting.
If it's right, it's right.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about it. Yeah. I mean, we don't script Capes and Scowls.
Right?
We just do it. We just show up and we just start.
Yeah, we don't script Capes and Schools. I mean, sorry, that's a typo on
that. Yeah, that wasn't in my show notes, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of times writers actually do better under pressure, because, like, if you give them, like, infinite amount of time, they'll just, like, keep writing and keep writing and keep writing until...
Or not write at all until, like, the
night before anyway, and then they're like, oh, God, I need to write an entire movie tonight.
That's definitely my style, 100%.
Yeah.
The pressure, I need the last minute.
Yeah, that's
creative types in general.
Yeah,
you know, it feels like we're never going to be ahead of the game.
Yeah,
it's like we have to be right with it. Right. What is the quote from Peter Jackson? Is it's a train that is moving, and we're furiously laying the tracks, hoping that we stay ahead of the train as the tracks are being laid down.
Pretty much.
That sounds about right.
So, yeah, I guess continuing on film stuff, this was just announced. I don't have, like, any details about it, but HBO has greenlit a Watchmen TV show. So, for those of you like myself who are huge fans of the classic 1980s Alan Moore comic, they're coming back at it. And I have a good feeling because HBO, they've been really on point recently with a lot of their stuff. So I think they can probably take back a little bit of what was missing from the, what was it, 2008 movie or 2000, I forget, the late 2000s movie, especially as a show. I think it'd be really interesting to see, like, a 12-part show where they take, like, one chapter per episode. You could easily do that in a season.
Yeah, that would be brilliant, actually, to just break it down to the individual issues done as... A miniseries.
And then one thing I think the movie was really lacking was the backstory into the original Watchmen.
The
Minutemen. That was a little lacking for me. So I'm hoping also that they get some more time now that it's a show.
Well, and they did the Before Watchmen miniseries recently, so there's some more information they can pull from. So if they attend them and this going beyond a single season, there is a wealth of info that you can use to stretch it out, but in a meaningful way to supply some story background.
Yeah, it's a really well created universe for having been such like a short run.
Yeah.
So that's all I have on that.
I wonder what there are pieces of that scare me, but I think one of the biggest weaknesses of the original film, and it was miscast. There were certain people in roles that they're great actors, and I think they delivered good performances. I don't know that they were the right character fits for the Watchmen.
Mm-hmm. I feel that.
I shouldn't say the Watchmen. There's nothing. Yeah. The team is the Minutemen.
Well, the original team was, and then they were the Watchmen.
Were they actually? Like, did they actually have the name the Watchmen?
Yeah.
It just never appears in anything. It's always obscured by something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Did they even... Actually, now that you mentioned it, I don't even know if they had a name.
I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't have a copy here in front of me, so...
And I've never seen it, so I don't know.
Never seen it or read, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, no.
Oh, wow.
You know what?
I know there's a blue.
This is going to be a nice social experiment.
Yeah.
You should watch the movie first and then go back and read it.
Okay.
And see if your opinions are different starting from that line. And hearing all of the information about it being so, like, within the comic book community respected as this massive piece of work that was, you know, well-loved and well-respected.
So, right. All right, yeah, maybe I'll do that.
We can do a post follow-up thing.
Mm-hmm. Other news?
Sure, yeah, let's talk about Marvel's Legacy event. I'm going to pull up some data really quick because there's actually a Legacy issue number one that'll be launching. This is coming from Jason Aaron and Asad Ribic, who Asad Ribic is a painter style artist. I think it's oils that he does. Beautiful, beautiful art. But this is going to be a new jumping on point. So it's going to explore the history of the characters. Excuse me. My voice
history of the characters of the...
in the Marvel Universe. Okay. So I'm trying to get this... I'm just going to read the quick synopsis.
Sure.
An Asgardian Titan, a Wakandan warrior bred to be king, the very first Sorcerer Supreme. So it looks like they're going to go back prior to universe that we have and maybe do a nice jumping on reset point to see the history of these characters, which makes sense. I mean, if you're going to choose three characters, you can Odin, the original Black Panther, and then the original Sorcerer Supreme. That's a pretty sweet place to go.
Right.
It's starting to seem like we're looking at a Marvel rebirth for the event that was so successful for DC last year. This looks like we're heading in that direction.
Interesting.
I don't know if everything's going to get a new number one, but these are the titles that have been confirmed. Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. Incredible Hulk, which is replacing Totally Awesome Hulk.
Thank God.
And it looks like they're actually going to plant Hulk again. That seems to be the storyline here. Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, jumping back to that, looks like she will be involved with the two remaining members of the Fantastic Four. And there are rumors around a Fantastic Two title.
What?
Which actually, would be the Thing and Human Torch.
Because the Thing is actually a reoccurring character in the Moon Girl comics.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's kind of exciting. Yeah. It'd be pretty interesting to see if that'll be a jumping off point.
Because they're both from the same part of New York, actually.
Oh, no way.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, he's just, like, there sitting on a bench. And
that's
he's
pretty
just
cool.
Like, yeah, my old stomping grounds.
That's cool.
I mean, I still miss Invisible Woman, but whatever. I'll have to deal
we'll
with
see
it.
What happens with that. Mm-hmm. Especially with this new event.
Right.
X-Men Blue, I find it funny that X-Men Gold wasn't mentioned yet, but I'm sure they'll both continue to be running. Astonishing X-Men, which is the new title that will be launching in, I think it's August or mid-July.
With Bishop.
Yeah, I'm excited about that book. Amazing Spider-Man Renew Your Vows. Looks like it will be continuing.
Yes.
I think that's great. I'm going to just digress off of this one because that one deals with Legacy in its own universe.
Mm.
So if Legacy is going to be the theme of this whole event,
yeah,
it makes total sense to do something with that story. And I'm just really glad that it's continuing because that's one of my favorite books every month. And then America is one of the titles
really
that will be continuing.
It didn't do... Like, wow. Is it doing well?
It didn't do well here.
Uh-huh. Here meaning...
Griffin Games and
okay.
Comics.
Okay, yeah, like in America? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
In China.
Right, America. Chinese people love America.
Sorry. our subscription count went really, really far down. But... apparently that's a character they want as part
of love America, but I did not like the book and I'm gonna cancel it.
You know,
she's
what?
An amazing character, however the current run going on, I stuck with it through the third through the first three issues.
Still not getting its footing?
Yeah, no, it didn't. I mean, it might have caught on since then. I haven't picked it up since issue 3 though.
Yeah. I don't know. Huh. But those are, that's confirmed, those titles. And then the Fantastic Two is a rumor based on some artwork that's been revealed. So, and that's as of today.
Sure.
I saw those titles. There's some, all of the covers that have been released are homages to existing previous storylines, which, once again, legacy, it's all playing back on this idea of looking at the past and reflecting on it, which hopefully bodes well for Ms. Marvel. I think that's a character that definitely needs to stick around in this current, this new universe for Marvel.
Yeah. Yeah, that should be really interesting. I think that's one of the things that, like, after Marvel Now and...
Marvel like, Now?
Yeah, Now. the most recent Now. Yes. Yeah, that was, like, the biggest criticism was, like, there's all these new people, where are my old peeps at? And I think this is, like, their attempt to sort of rectify that with old and new fans, to give old fans a reason to care about these new, all these new characters, and to give new fans a reason to care about all these old characters. Because if you talk to, like, the different, like, sort of sides about this, they're both like, I don't, like, Jane Foster Thor, woo! Like, I don't give a fuck about Odin's son. Right. Or, like, the people are like, woo, Odin's son, who cares about this new, like, Lady Thor?
Yeah.
So it's very divisive, and I think this is them, finally trying to come to terms with this.
I don't completely mind that these things happen. They happen too often now. To me, it's just like, why am I even reading comics? Like, why? Like, my current run of anything in Marvel doesn't matter, right? Am I incorrect by saying that? Is that an incorrect statement?
Well,
it doesn't matter what bad guy they're fighting, because when they do the rebirth, nothing matters.
Yeah,
I would say reading comics is always worth it for the moment. For being in the moment, it doesn't necessarily matter who they're fighting or what, or like why they're, or I guess I should say it doesn't really matter who they're fighting so much as why they're fighting.
All right, that's fair.
And if you have a good writer and a good artist pairing up, every page of a comic is a pleasure to read.
Well, and comics is such a, like, it's a weird media to begin with. There are not great runs in every character, so there's always those moments. And I was listening to something, and it really exemplified this idea, is the fact that when there's a bad run of a character or something that just doesn't fit well with the overall continuity, when the next writer comes on, they ignore it, and we as an audience go, hey, that's fine. You know, we move on from it.
Yeah.
It is always that new take. I don't know, this seems like a really smart business paradigm. It seems like their reaction to Now is the same way that DC reacted to the New 52.
Mm-hmm.
It was finally like, what happened to these characters before that we missed in this iteration?
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
I don't know.
All right, well, we'll see what happens.
Positive, negative.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and then I just have one last bit of news before we move on to the big news, which, actually, this is pretty big news, because it was the Library of Congress actually recently begun to archive webcomics. So you can go to the Library of Congress's webpage, and they have a sub-site for webcomics. There's, like, two pages, I want to say, like, 20 or 30 of them so far. They got, like, XKCD, Hark of Vagrant, Hyperbole and a Half, two of my personal favorites, Octopus Pie, written by Meredith Gran, which was started online, and then Image actually picked it up, and I think sponsors it a little bit.
Okay.
And then Dinosaur Comics, which was written and created by Ryan North, who currently writes Squirrel Girl, one of my personal favorites. So, yeah, all of those, though, are great. I mean, there's obviously a reason that the Library of Congress picked up these specific ones, and that also shows how culturally influential the comic medium is becoming, not just the physical graphic novels, but now these ones that only appear online are also gaining such cultural traction.
Right, and relevance. Yeah, it's awesome. I think it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great. Hopefully it's just a sign of comic books being more respected in general. And right. the comic book storytelling, I should say.
Because, yeah.
You know, the formats are changing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The way it comes out is different. So.
For sure.
They are. Like, especially webcomics as a medium, like, a lot of those just can't translate into physical forms because you get, like, some webcomics that have GIFs as panels and some, you know, a lot of them have alt text now. Like, you have your mouse over different panels and you'll get, like, alt text and, like, they're, like, artists are really using the internet as a new medium that I mean, they a lot of times they'll put it out in like paperback or hardback forms, but there's always something to it's like people who are like, oh, you have to read, you know, War and Peace in original Russian to really understand. It's like you have to read XKCD in its original internet
to really understand, to really
get like the full thing, yeah,
the full experience.
It's an unrestricted format because you can. I'm going to write this story that exists as one page today, and then you're like, no, I'm going to write three pages on this one.
Mm-hmm.
So collecting that, you have just formatting issues, putting it together. It would have to be billed as an anthology, is like not necessarily. A normal format, but that's great. That's really cool.
Yeah,
like, experimentation's awesome.
Yeah, it's cool news.
Yeah, one of my favorite. Yeah, exactly. Like one of my favorite web comics, Homestuck, is amazing, but it's 10,000 pages long, and so
it wouldn't work any other way.
And some of those pages are video games that you play, actually.
Right.
And so, like, how you can't put that into a book. Like, you can't, that's just
not that full experience.
Yeah. I mean, you can have, you know, screenshots of all the things or whatever, but
it'll be the same.
It's, yeah. And then, like, imagine, like, a book that big if you included all the screenshots too.
It'd be too much.
So that was really cool.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Congratulations, government.
That's right.
You've done something good for once in the past couple of years.
Wow. Moving on.
Enough politics for today.
So, are we going to talk about this amazing trailer that dropped about a week and a half ago?
I think so.
Yes.
It's time.
Yes.
Black Panther.
Woo!
Black Panther. Oh my gosh.
I don't even know what to say. I'm still like shaken up from how amazing it was.
Yeah.
I just remember hearing that I was going to see a teaser trailer.
Yeah.
And then having my jaw on the floor because that was not a teaser trailer. That was a full 1:50 opus.
Yes.
It was beautiful.
It was perfect.
Oh, man.
I don't want any more trailers. I just want just that and nothing else. I don't want any more.
Yeah, not until... That's true. Like, it did everything.
Everything.
Like, movies put out 3, 4, 5 trailers sometimes, and this was it all. Everything. We got a ton of awesome characters. We got, like, this amazing feel that's happening, you know. I think something that we've talked about in the past is how Wakanda is such a hard thing to really get down because of its intersectionality between traditional African culture and, like, being the most technologically advanced country in the Marvel Universe. And, man, from the trailer, oh, man.
They nailed it. And then the whole idea that it's the inspiration for the El Dorado myth, that Golden City is, I lost my mind. And that's like 10 seconds in, I'm like, what? How come I never thought about this? This is fantastic.
Yeah, I know.
There were so many good, like, so many, and that intersection, like you said, of, like, Wakanda being both, you know, African and this highly advanced. There's the part where they showed it. I thought I was watching, like, Star Wars for, like, a second.
It's,
like,
yeah.
Is that a Star Wars movie? Oh, no. This is just Wakanda.
That's a really great example because it's, like, you saw all these beautiful colors and a tribal look. And then it's what looks like a spaceship lifting up. You're like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, there's people in, you know, these, brightly colored togas with, like, the face paint and, like, the tribal tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have, like, a laser gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something like this. Which is, like, in my mind, exactly what Wakanda.
Oh my gosh, is. they are going to nail this movie.
You feel so much in that trailer.
Oh man,
so much.
Their thing is too. There's a scene where they're like digging up dirt, and supposedly that has to do with like vibranium being in the dirt, and that will be an elixir that T'Challa has to take.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense.
So that's really crazy. Yeah, it's going to be, I don't know. Like, I'm so excited about that. One of the things I really wanted to talk about, too, was the difference in the Black Panther costumes. Mm. I don't know if you guys saw this, but it appears that there's two different suits in the movie. Oh. There's the one that we saw in Civil War, and then there's the one in the final moments of the trailer, and then when T'Challa is, like, walking towards the big group.
Right.
I'm wondering if we're looking at the sequence where the dog is barking at the Black Panther. I'm wondering if that's T'Chaka. If we're seeing a flashback scene of him in the costume, and that's the suit that we see in Civil War, because that's the suit that is taken.
Right.
Whereas the end suit is more simplified. It has a different look about the eyebrows is a different level of intensity. I'm wondering if that's the new suit that maybe Shuri made for T'Challa.
Right.
I'm going to take all of the aspects of our technology and really advance it one step forward. So,
yeah, I was, because you had mentioned that before, and then when we were rewatching it right before the podcast, I was looking at that, but I didn't necessarily. Personally, I didn't notice that, but it's such a flash that you see it in the in the trailer. Like, it's seriously like just the flashlight beaming up, and and like it's like 1 second, and so
I think,
but that would be super interesting if we get this sort of span of years of this.
What I think I'm most excited about after seeing the trailer is the women. The women, the women, the women, the women. And that's what I'm really like. And I know I like, you know, as the gay guy, I probably shouldn't be so excited about that. But that's what I'm all about is the women right now. Like, they just looked amazing. They looked spot on. They looked elegant. They looked like they could fight. You know, I'm hopefully not butchering the Dora Milaje or Dora Milaje, however you want to pronounce it. I don't care. Those set of characters, those women are going to be badasses. It's almost like having like a little bit of like the Amazon and the Black Panther movie.
That's true.
It's arming the Amazons the technology. What was like the Black Panther cannons that like the arm cannons we think is Shuri. We're not really 100% positive that that's T'Challa's sister.
But we thought that maybe there'd be some Midnight Angels, which would be really awesome,
right?
If that was a possibility.
Aneka and Io would be a great pair to see in that.
They really would.
That's such an amazing, and like how all, you know, most movies they have to have like this romance subplot. That would be so amazing instead of seeing T'Challa have this like, you know, romantic subplot with somebody.
Which
wouldn't make sense.
No.
That would, seeing Aneka and Io have, like, take that as the spotlight would really add an amazing layer to that movie.
Yeah. And they wouldn't even have to really play it up that much, honestly. They could just make them as two badass women who are just fighting and, like, whoa, everyone's, like, in love with them, how badass they are. And then somewhere at some point, you see them kiss or hold each other,
right?
And then that's it, and then you move on. And you're like, whoa, whoa, what?
Yeah, it wouldn't be like the typical action movie where, like, the guy is like, I'm gonna go kill these people, I'll be back for you, my love.
Right.
And then, you know, leaves the, quote, love interest behind for, like, you know, an hour of the movie, and then finally comes back at the end and is like, I told you I'd be back. Yeah. But instead, like you were saying, they just go out, they kick some ass, and then at one point, you know, one of them is just like, that was amazing the way you kicked that ass. And like, and just, you know, had a quick kiss there. You wouldn't even need to, terribly much in there.
Yeah.
What's also really interesting about this trailer is it's framed by its connection to the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which I thought was really like, it's an interesting thing as you frame it with Everett Ross and
Martin Freeman.
Yeah, Martin Freeman. And then Ulysses Klaue.
Yeah.
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 Which shout out to Andy Serkis, Gollum, Caesar, you know, the man who's always in the motion capture suit is actually hanging out with a without any makeup on, just being himself and is terrifying in his ridiculous laugh that he's just breaking down. But looking at Black Panther history, I was researching after seeing this trailer because I wanted to know what these characters were. Michael B. Jordan is playing Killmonger, and in the storylines, it appears that his family was shunned and exiled from Wakanda for assisting Claw in escaping. And Claw says at the beginning of that storyline that he's one of the only people to see Wakanda and leave. So it would make sense that Killmonger's character sees, like, the opportunity when T'Chaka dies to return to Wakanda and maybe try to usurp power.
Interesting.
So if that's, you know, that would be a good basis for the storyline of where you drive it through.
And the political divide with what happens in Wakanda.
And because Claw exists and escaped, you then have to, T'Challa has to deal with the fact that the world is now going to know what Wakanda is. Because that information is now being let out.
Right.
And then that would set up, because it does seem like they're going to draw at least a little bit from the Ta-Nehisi Coates run, which A Nation Under Our Feet, which pretty much deals with the whole political system in Wakanda being turned upside down, which would be a great catalyst for this happening. You know, it's existed for thousands of years as this one way, and now that all this outside influence is coming in, it forces them to re-examine the whole thing.
And bringing Shuri in was an interesting choice as well, because that's a whole separate kind of, like, that automatically kind of boosts them into the modern Black Panther just by having Shuri around.
I'm also curious, like, I wonder if she was a Black Panther at any point in time. I don't know age-wise if she's older. I think she's older than T'Challa, right? In the story?
I don't know.
But maybe at some point in time, as T'Chaka got too old, maybe she was the one in the suit at some point. So much that they can do.
Yeah, the fact that Shuri's even there, there's a lot you can do with that. And
then now that he's the eldest son, it's his job to take over. So, I don't know. That trailer, though. We talked, this is a teaser, first teaser, and we've talked for, what, 10, 15 minutes about this?
Yeah, I know. So, oh, man.
Perfectly executed. Well done, Marvel.
We are so teased.
I was upset at a February release date because I'm like, that's not showing, faith in the movie. You're putting it in kind of a weird time zone. I don't care now. That's sooner than later. I'm excited about that.
However long they need to make the rest of that movie is,
take the time.
Take your time. You guys are totally on point with this right now.
Yeah.
The director, Ryan Coogler, directed Creed as well, right? Like, that's...
I'm
pretty sure that he had done that. And if you haven't seen Creed, it's amazing.
That says an Apollo Creed, correct?
That is an Apollo Creed.
Yep.
He directed Creed.
Yeah.
With Michael B. Jordan.
Nice.
Your principal villain in Black Panther.
Nice.
So. Cool. Well, is that all the news for now?
Yeah.
I think that's enough.
That was a lot. That was a lot going on right there.
Yeah.
What do we have? Do we have time for one comic review?
I think we have time for
one each.
One each,
One each. Okay. Cool. All right, everyone got theirs?
Yeah. Okay, y'all.
No, I'm not going to do that one. not that one. Sure. I'll do DC's Martian Manhunter and Marvin the Martian crossover with Looney Tunes. All right, so this was actually pretty decent. And the premise I thought was pretty awesome. So Marvin the Martian... In his universe, he's blown up Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done it because he realized that the Martians of his world were just obsessed with Earth, right? And he's like, we gotta stop this obsession with Earth. So he just blew it up. So then he realizes there's multiverses out there. And he's like, there seems to be an issue with Martians and Earth, and there's obsession between the two. And so his job is to go out and blow up all the Earths so that the Martians can finally live free of Earth and its influence. And so... Marvin the Martian comes to the DC Universe and tries to save Martian the Manhunter, because Martian the Manhunter, he feels, is just being, like, isolated and depressed and, like, sitting in this world that hates him, and yet he keeps trying to save it. And Marvin's like, look, let me just get you out of your misery. Let me just blow up this Earth, and you don't have to worry about this ever again. Mm. And Marvin's like, the Martian Manhunter is just like, no, I don't think that's good. We shouldn't do that. But as he's trying to save Earth, all the humans are like, we hate you. You're a Martian. You're trying to kill us. We don't know what you're doing. And so now he's like having this conflict internally. Wait, maybe Marvin the Martian is right. Maybe we should just blow up the Earth and let it go. And so he has a really interesting internal conflict, and I love it. Hmm. And it's a fantastic approach. And by the way, whoever's drawing this, I don't know, there's a lot of names on the front. Is it Barbieri? I don't know. I really love the way that they drew and the art around Marvin the Martian. He looks really good. He looks like he could actually be a character in the DC Universe. So it didn't look too cartoony outside of like the little short in the back. Like his actual look is fantastic and lots of details. So I liked it a lot.
Like Roman armor and the gladiatorial look.
Yeah, it has like very similar lines to a lot of the Martian stuff that comes up in like the DC universe, like that sort of like pattern oriented, and symbology.
It was penciled by Aaron Lopresti.
Okay,
excellent.
Yeah. So, anyways, I think it's worth it. Go pick it up, read it. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I was surprised by how moving it was. Mm-hmm. Like there was like you felt a lot of heart. I expected something that was going to be slapsticky.
Yes.
And the backstory. Yeah, sure. The backup. Excuse me, but. Yeah, it was a lot of heart in that book.
It really was. My favorite part, though, despite wanting that seriousness, my favorite part by far, let me see if I can just say it, behold, the Illudium Q36 Explosive Space Modulator. It was my favorite part. Like, yes, okay, it really, even though it was super serious and I loved it, I was so looking forward to him saying something like that. Right. So that made me happy.
Yeah.
That's his classic line of all those different weapons.
And it just looks like a fancy stick of dynamite.
Yes.
Yeah, I was definitely reading through it, and I just had, like, Marvin's voice. Yes, come on. I can't do it.
Yeah, it's hard not to have his voice as you're reading it, but he looks very serious despite that. So anyways, I enjoyed it. Go pick up Martian Manhunter and Marvin the Martian. That's me.
Nice. All right. How about you, Nat?
Sure. I'm going to take a look here at Aquaman 25. This is the Underworld Part 1. It is a change in the creative teams, written by Dan Abnett, with art by Stepan Sejic.
Yes, yes, yes. Everyone hear that? Did everyone hear who the artist was?
Stepan Sejic. I'm sorry if I butchered your name.
Yeah, Leander's having an artgasm over here.
Yes. Yeah.
It is hard to not have an artgasm while you were looking through this book.
Allgasms can be had.
Yeah, so bring a change of clothes when you're reading this.
That's
one.
Right.
Oh my God.
Yeah, you might need it.
So I've never had the pleasure of reading a book that Sejic has, I wouldn't say penciled, because it is digitally painted with hard lines. This is, I don't know where to begin. This was just an absolute freaking joy. It takes place entirely in Atlantis, and it's framed at the idea that they've killed Arthur, that Aquaman is dead. So a new king has taken over, and he's from one of the poor districts of Atlantis, and one of the things he does is he opens up the magic school to everyone. So magic and technology are being given to everybody.
Well,
and
that's nice. That's a good thing.
That is a good thing, right? They're playing it very much like Atlantis is Wakanda, which I thought was kind of ironic, that it's the most technologically advanced society, and it all exists underwater, and he sealed them off from the surface world. He said, enough with this stupid conflict with America. We are our own entity. We're going to stay here, and we're going to become an isolationist culture. This is us.
Yeah.
Let's And, you know, he goes...
That sounds familiar.
Right? he goes full... He's hard hunting down the deformities, the mutations in the Atlanteans. So it's a dark and beautiful story. It's high fantasy. It's going to have... You can tell it's going to have an element of swashbuckling, which I'm really excited about. There's technology that is just absolutely gorgeous. Reminds me of a little bit of Michael Turner, Coral Tech from Fathom. It's just, I can't even, I'm blah, 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 blah. Yeah. I'm speechless looking at it.
It's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous. And it's,
if it's written well, it makes it even better.
It is written extremely well. You can follow the characters and follow the motivations, and then there's questions. And I've always loved storytelling where you're like, what is going on? Because you set the scene really clearly. Arthur's dead. But you know who's telling us that Arthur's dead? Arthur. So Aquaman is the one telling us that he's been dead for weeks. Mira is completely distraught. Mm. She's on the surface world, so she's stuck right now.
Okay.
She's stuck with Tula, and they're just basically trying to... Tula's just trying to comfort her and try to save her.
And who are
her.
These two characters, for those who have never read
it? Mira is Aquaman's wife, the Queen of Atlantis, or former queen now, because they've been usurped. And Tula is a... She's been a supporting character throughout different versions of Aquaman. I know her most as being one of the supporting characters from Young Justice, the animated series, and being one of the great magic users of the Atlanteans. But yeah, they deal a lot with like the grunge, like the lower regions of Atlantis, and they even have like title cards for what districts they're in. The Ninth Triad is what it's called. It feels like this high fantasy, merging technology Aquaman. I am so excited to read more of this story. This is a double sized or an oversized issue.
That's going straight into my bin. I mean, I already love Stephen Sajak, however you want to say it.
Right.
And I love everything he's ever done. I've gone back and almost collected everything he's ever drawn because I love him that much. He's so amazing.
Well, he makes Aquaman look like a badass.
Yeah.
I mean, Aquaman's back to having the beard and the long hair like he did in the Peter David run, but he's got both hands.
Yeah, and that's pretty big by itself.
Right? This book is astoundingly good. It is a great jumping on point. I have no desire to read an Aquaman character. I will be reading this going forward.
So, that's awesome. Wow. And if anyone out there reads it and is like, oh, I really love this artist, let me know. I can hook you up with all the titles that I think you would love.
I'm going to have a conversation with you after this, because I will definitely be reading more by this artist.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see... digital artwork also making a huge come up in comics as well.
What it looks like an inked piece of artwork, but it's all digital, and the choices made for shorthand remind me like of a good cartoonist. But I you have to look at it yourself. Yeah. This is one that's it's just amazing.
See it for yourself. All right, what you got over there, Patrick?
Okay, so I have issue 19 of Ms. Marvel.
Ooh.
So this one, as are most Ms. Marvels, especially in the beginning, this is the beginning of a new story arc. Just so on point, so like politically and socially relevant, but still a great superhero comic. So... I'm just going to try to run through this really quick, even though there's a lot of stuff to unpack. So it opens up with Eid. I don't know how to pronounce that, but it's the holiday celebrating the end of Ramadan.
Okay.
So everybody's getting together, family, feast, imagine it of like Thanksgiving pretty much.
Okay.
And so they're going back home after they get groceries, and the road, there's like all these roadblocks and stuff like that, and there's these signs saying bring back the real Jersey City, which is a little ominous. And Kamala, Miss Marvel, is talking to her sister-in-law, and she's like, what the hell does this mean? And her sister-in-law is like, well, when people talk about the real thing, it only means one thing, which is divide and conquer. And so it separates, kind of reminiscent of something maybe that's happening in our current political sphere. You know, something is the real this or not this. And then it transitions really quickly into this, these, like, neighborhood patrol kind of people that just come out of nowhere because of an executive order passed down by the new mayor of Jersey City that all superpowered people have to be registered for, to be on this registry, which is also a little bit reminiscent of maybe something that can happen. Oh, I wasn't thinking civil. It's kind of a call to the quote Muslim registry that a certain politician, being that Ms. Marvel is a Muslim character, that a certain politician has proposed on multiple occasions, and the fact that it was passed down by an executive order, which is something also very common in these days.
Still, that registration period in the Marvel universe normally is the Civil War. So I wonder what that means for the real world.
and it is a little like weird, especially in Civil War and all this stuff. Like, it's this whole thing, but putting it in the context of Ms. Marvel, especially in this day and age, having a registry for people really sends home that message of what that actually means for people. And then so there's a great superhero battle, new villain, old villain, coming back. And then the end, man, the last page of this just got to me. So it's Kamala's brother, Amir. He's taking some leftovers from the feast to a neighbor of theirs. And he goes outside, and these two patrol guys who were in it earlier, they, like, stop, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, you know, just going out, taking some food. And they, so they're like, well, super people need to be registered. Way back in, like, volumes ago, Amir had superpowers for, like, half an issue. And it was kind of like a weird thing. And he's like, oh, yeah, that was, like, one thing, like, a while ago. And it was, like, I was being experimented on. And, like, it's not even a big, he has, like, this big old smile on his face.
Yeah.
And then they grab him, and we get this, just this heartbreaking thing. One of them, he says, hey, what are you doing? And one of them says, please don't make this harder by resisting. And he says, I'm not resisting, you're hurting me.
Oh, no! And the emotions.
Oh, man.
The feels.
From
a guy that you probably met for a long time who's super nice, always has a smile on his face, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's always, you know, pretty much, he just got married, has a baby on the way, super, he's the classic, like, big brother to look up to, always looking out for his sister.
Sure, wow. Sure.
And then to get that line that's also very relevant today in these kind of social atmospheres.
Thanks all for bringing it down right at the end, Patrick. As we're closing up.
All in all,
fantastic.
Fantastic though. It's a new arc, so people who aren't into Ms. Marvel yet, it's a great jumping off point. And if you're at all interested in, like, social political commentary, just so much is packed into this.
It's awesome. So much. I made to pick up that one too. Darn it. Too many. Well, before we give you guys any more suggestions for you guys to fill up your bins with, we'll probably stop here and call it a day. But I guess that's it. Say goodbye, everyone.
Bye.